My name is Simon Cox. The date is the 25th of September 2009, and the time is 3:10 in the afternoon, and I'm interviewing on behalf of the Wellcome Trust. Can I firstly ask you to say your name, age, and where you've come from?
My name is Martin Maynard. I'm aged 59, and I live in Pangbourne in Berkshire.
How long have you lived in Berkshire for?
Berkshire? Well, I grew up in London up until when the 1950s and 60s, and then moved to Reading in 1973. So I've been there for, you have to do the maths for me, 37 years.
And what are your memories of London in the 50s and 60s?
Very different to what it is now. I mean, coming to Trafalgar Square, I remember coming up in the 60s, and it was sort of full of pigeons and pigeon poo, guana, is it what they call it? And there'd be the traditional trip up here at New Year and sort of splashing the fountains. I think that often you come to London on a Saturday because the shops were open in Oxford Street on Saturday morning, but then it would be closed after that, and Sunday to be very quiet. It's very different to now, where it's very much of a cosmopolitan 24-hour buzz.
Do you think London has improved?
Well, I don't think things do improve or not. I mean, there's a lot of fun times then, there's a lot of fun times now. It's changed. Attitudes have changed. I mean, we go back into the 60s, when I grew up in the 60s, we had all these sort of social revolution, sexual revolution. I mean, going back to that time, gays were incarcerated, Rolling Stones were being locked up for having a spliff, and now they're knighted and so on and so forth. So, I mean, society has changed overall. Has London changed? Well, there's an awful lot more traffic.
Could you say that your views have changed since that period of time as well?
My views on?
Say, if we pick up the Cultural Revolution, Sexual Revolution.
Well, I think so, yes. I think that growing up at that time, one's attitudes towards people, women, friends, what we now call PC, was all very much very different in then. I mean, in those days, there was a lot of oppression of blacks, women, and minorities all around. There was a great amount of we are British and we want to keep it this sort of way. And I think probably I grew up in that. I hope I have changed dramatically since then, and are being accepting of all the different cultures and things.
And what are you currently doing in Berkshire?
Currently, I run a company called Sounds Good. We are in the music business, and we are at the greasy end of the music business, making the CDs and the print and all the various bits and pieces, which in fact are going out of fashion now because it's all going digital online. That's the thing that's changed, you see. Back in the 60s, you had your music came on a big black plastic disc, which it was a sort of 12-inch LP, lasted for 20 minutes on one side, you turn it over. Nowadays, it's constant, relentless in the digital age. Your iPlayer can need never stop.
And what led you into this business?
Always a fascination with audio recording, being techie and interested in the techie side of audio.
So had you always had a career in the music industry?
No, I started off as an apprentice electrician, then spent 5 years as a telephone engineer, various forms of telephones and radio communications. Then moved to Berkshire to work on modems when 4.8 kilobit was the top speed you could get on a very expensive telephone line. And then started being more interested in recording, bought a bread wagon, converted it into a mobile recording studio. Often used to come to London recording bands in pubs and places.
Any particular bands that we might have heard of?
Well, coming out and recording in the field, I can't remember many of the bands, but then I set up a studio in Reading, and we had quite a lot of people from the likes of, I can't remember their names now. Oh, we had Van Morrison. I worked with him for a couple of weeks. He came down, worked with him, the Seekers, the pop bands of the mid-70s. Shivadi, Rubet, all sorts of sort of people and that sort of thing.
And is it possible for you to say where your love of music stemmed from?
Well, I think it's a mistake to say that I have a love of music in that sense. I have a love of music technology and the recordings and stuff. But if you ask me what my favourite music is, then I suppose it's back in those days with Pink Floyd and Frank Zappa and those sort of things. But I do like sort of quite a lot of modern music. But more recently, I've become a great fan of Radio 3. Not the classical side of it, but late night up junk. What's it called? Late night. It comes on about 11:15 at night on Radio 3. Plays a lot of world music.
Just to take you to the plinth, how did you first hear about the project?
Well, I heard about the project. I can't remember how I heard. I mean, I've been interested in the other projects that have been on the plinth. I'm quite interested in Anthony Gormley's his structures and works. Very disappointed, by the way, you're not here to meet me. And so I like the idea of that. And then I was quite amused. I heard it on The Archers, which was quite punchy quite a lot. And I just liked the whole idea of it. And I mean, it's difficult to quantify. It's difficult to justify, is it art or not, all that rubbish. I mean, depends what your art, what you call art. But I think it's a great idea for just somebody doing something. I think the 100 days is long enough. I hope there's a big party afterwards.
So how did you feel once you heard you got a place?
I was surprised, because it came, I was fiddling around the internet, and it came through at about sort of 12, I must have come through after midnight. I was at home, and I rang my wife up, who was away at the time, and woke her up, said, yeah, I'm going to be on the plinth.
And what do you plan to do with your time on the plinth?
Ah, well, one of the lifelong interests has been amateur radio. And I've always been fascinated by the fact that with there's a few components, you can create an electrical field which will travel to other parts of the world. That electrical field is a radio wave, and you can communicate and talk to people. And the object this afternoon is to connect the plinth up with the rest of the world. So I am taking up there a radio, amateur radio station, and I've arranged with some other amateurs to have a conversation about amateur radio and how that will impinges on our society today in schools and training, and lots of people are interested in techie sports. For example, did you know that of the only hobbies that you need to have take exams and a license for is amateur radio and flying? So that's how serious people are about the controlling radio transmissions and things. And we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about various modes of amateur radio. How, when I used to come up to, when I was 18 or 19, 17 or 18, used to come up to, on a Saturday, to Lyle Street, just above here, now Chinatown. It was full of ex-army surplus radio shops, with all sorts of bits and gizmos you could buy it, you could take home, bolt together and make a transmitter out of. And as always, you'd have these notices also, model first floor, so it's a sort of geek's paradise.
Would you just mind defining what you mean by amateur radio?
Amateur radio, well, amateur is the love of. Radio is transmissions. The radio amateurs, or hams, are interested in transmitting, building transmitters and using radio, not only, a lot of them just to talk to each other, but a lot of them use it for controlling devices, building equipment. A lot of them are interested in the technologies of it. Do you know there's amateur satellites zooming around? We won't be able to communicate with one today, but we will be talking about them.
How did they get these satellites up there?
Well, an awful lot of the funding, an awful lot of the projects, the universities and things, very experienced people. See, amateur radio is the one place where you can design radio equipment, but pretty much all the kit and stuff you're using today has been designed by engineers who probably started off fiddling around with components at home and stuff. And amateur radio was a popular hobby, more popular than now. It's more computers now, sort of those sort of things. So what was the question again?
How do they get the satellite
out? Oh, yeah, the satellite. Okay, so there's a lot of space in space shuttles and places like that will go up, and if you can put a convincing case together, you can get a bit of payload and you can get something up there. So there's been a whole series called AMSAT satellites going up there, which are lasting, and you can work out the, if you get the sum, do the sums, work out where the satellite's going to be, what part it's going to travel through the sky, and if you then point a transmitter and transmit a signal at that, it'll retransmit that, and you can chat to someone maybe in the other side of the world.
And how long have you been involved with amateur radio?
Well, I was first licensed in 1968, but I sort of, the hobby's waned and times, but I've been back into it now for about the last 10 years, fiddling around. I mean, I'm not a highly technical amateur. I like fiddling with radios. Some of the support crew that come with me and who will be talking today are very, very technical on particular subjects.
And how are you exactly going to be transmitting from the plinth? What equipment are you using?
Well, the transmission and equipment is going to be using a thing called D-Star. It's a digital mode on 70 centimetre band, which is about 400 and something megahertz, about 430 megahertz. And I'll be transmitting from there, and then other amateurs who are listening in will be receiving on that frequency and then adding their contributions back to the plinth, which has got a little PA speaker so people on the plinth and around should be able to hear what's going on.
And what would you like to gain from your experience on the plinth?
Well, if I can get, from the point of view of doing amateur radio on the plinth and getting a bit of publicity and some people taking some photographs of amateur radio from the plinth, if that can raise a little bit more awareness about the hobby and bring people into it, that would be good. Personally, I just want to be in the plinth as my doing thing. I mean, I'm gaining out of today's experience, being here now, being interviewed, being a staffer. Well, not 15 minutes, but a whole 60 minutes.
And how many people, roughly, could you say, are actively involved in amateur radio?
Do you know? I've no idea in terms of numbers. I think it probably amounts in this UK of licensed amateurs, probably in about 100,000 region. I mean, there's a lot of amateur radio. How many are active is a different story. A lot of people do amateur radio as an add-on at college or things like that and learning things, but active radio amateurs, I don't know. There is a good question.
And you mentioned obviously it's one of the few hobbies where you had to be licensed. What did you have to go through before you got given the license?
Well, in my day, you had to sit a City and Guilds exam, which was on radio theory, propagation, effects of interference. I mean, radio is now such an embedded part of our society, you cannot allow people to play with radios without, no, what is it? It's just like fiddling with a live gun. You're probably using radio and wireless for your links to the plinth here. You're using wireless in your computer list on wireless networks. We're using radio and wireless calls from our mobile phones. If people started playing and emitting inappropriate transmissions in those spectrums where those things operate, the fabric of society would collapse. I mean, really.
And with the sort of television becoming more of a sort of a visual medium, would you say that radio is a dying form?
No, because you've got to remember that radio is the means, it's the function by which the data is transmitted. We use a radio transmission for television or anything else. By the way, there's a lot of amateur television people out there as well doing spinning TV, and if I could have got that together, I'd done that as well. But remember that we're not talking about radio as in the wireless or listening to the home service or Radio 1. We're talking about using radio maybe for talking to the people, but also for other technology links.
Just to take on a different subject, you mentioned your wife. How long have you been married for?
Been married for Antonia for 16 years next week.
And when did you first meet her?
Well, 16 and a bit years ago, okay. On a blind date.
Would you say you connected straight away?
Absolutely not.
Was it a tricky relationship?
No, it's just that I was a difficult person at school. I am dyslexic and have some problems with certainly with spelling and everything else. And I used to hate teachers. So the idea of ending up being married to one 60 years later or 50 years later is very, very odd. No, but I mean, I've done quite a lot of things in life. I've been great, but much spent my money on experiences and doing things. And when I broke up with my first partner, Barbara, I was looking for the younger model or trading it in. But actually, I've met Antonia, who is an intellectual, probably a greater intellect than mine. She's a very clever woman, actually.
And you talked about experiences being in your life. What experiences have you had?
I tend to get involved in things and take it to the limit. So I went on a tryout sailing thing once and then had to go through and become a yacht master, then become an offshore instructor, and then I did the Fastnet 3 times. Then I went off pressure flight, so then I had to learn to be a pilot and fly and do that sort of thing. So I sort of like to great much into getting experiences of gaining knowledge, quite learning things. I went to Glastonbury once and I quite far joined that, and now I run a section of it. So I mean, in terms of all of these things, I tend to sort of get pretty involved in things.
And is there a particular experience that you haven't done that you really want to?
I can't think of anything off the moment. There's lots of things I like to do. But there's aqua diving is the next thing, I think. Quite fancy idea of floating around in, not in space, but a bit underwater and doing something along those lines, actually.
And just outside of the plane, obviously you mentioned amateur radio and just your sailing. What other interests do you have at this moment in time in your life?
Well, I work with St John's and done their first day training, and I'm also a community responder. And that's something the health service or the ambulance service have put together, whereby if you dial 999 and you've got a heart problem or you've stopped breathing, you're unconscious, then there are trained people in the community who can maybe get there quicker because they live in the next street. Or we're equipped with oxygen, a defibrillator, airways, and we can provide keep going for another 5 or 6 minutes while the ambulance gets there with a bigger box of tricks.
And what inspired you to join St John's and be a community responder?
Working at Glastonbury, I look after a large section of the Glastonbury Festival stewarding at night, and we do have a lot of people there who are casualties, self-inflicted. Usually they've taken something they shouldn't, or they haven't taken something they should, and it's late at night and they sort of lose a little touch with reality, and dealing quite a lot of those sort of situations, maybe sort of want to become more interested in the first aid support side of it. And having done the sort of first aid work, somebody said, well, wouldn't it be a good idea if you become a first responder, because then you get to try out your skills more often. And I'm quite keen on doing things. I'm quite a strong socialist, and I quite think that socialism starts in the community about supporting other people.
Where would you say these ideas, these socialist ideas, came from?
I don't think over the years one realises that a socialism type state is the only way in which you can get equality in society. The predominance at the moment of a market-led society means that, well, any market-led society, you get a few winners and many losers. In a socialism, I'm not saying you go back to the ideas of each to his need type things. I think excellence should be awarded, but I do think a socialist principle, i.e. decision making based on the collective good rather than individual good, is a better way of doing it.
Just one final question. I'm going to ask if you can to sort of paint a picture of yourself at this moment in your life for us.
This moment in my life, you mean like now or today or at the moment?
Generally
speaking, well, coming up to 60 next year, business is definitely doing very much a change as optical media is, CDs are dying away. I can remember them only so recently, they were the hot thing. So changes, facing retirement, facing older age, I suppose. I mean, I'm 60 next year, I don't actually feel very much different than I was when I maybe turned 20 or 30, maybe a bit more wiser. Of a fear of the unknown. That's about it, really.
Thank you.